Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, and welcome to the EAN Cast, weekly neurology. I'm Emanuele D'Amico, and today's episode is part of our series on treatable causes of rare cerebral small vessel disease, or SVDS. We'll explore how to recognize the clinical red flag that might point toward the rare but potentially treatable form. Joining me today is Professor Anna Bersano, neurologist, and she is really expert on rare and complex cerebrovascular disease. Welcome, Anna, and it's great and my pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Emanuele. It's really a pleasure to be here. And this topic is really close to me and my expertise and also to my heart, because in clinical practice, recognizing these crucial signs can change the patient's entire trajectory. And the problem is that often clinicians don't recognize this rare form of cerebrovascular disorders. Contrarily, an early detection can open the door to specific and preventive strategies.
Okay, let's start with the basic. When we talk about cerebral small vessel disease, most clinicians immediately think of and about hypertension or age-related white matter change. But that's not the whole story, right, Anna?
Exactly. Sporadic cerebral small vessel disease that is common in older adults is mostly caused by hypertension or the emerging disorder that is cerebral amyloid angiopathy. But in some cases, mostly in young subjects, sometimes without the common cerebrovascular risk factor, the cerebral small vessel disease may be caused by a monogenic or metabolic defect. These cases are typically inherited, appear earlier in life, and importantly, sometimes they are treatable or require specific management measures. And the most important example of this form are CADASIL, Fabry disease, CARASIL, or COL4 A1 A2 related angiopathies. CADASIL is the most important heritable small vessel disease form and is due to mutation in the NOTCH3 gene. And this disease causes stroke or TIA in a large proportion of patients, around 80%, migraine with or without aura, cognitive disorders, psychiatric disturbances, and also seizure. Fabry disease is an X-linked recessive lysosomal storage disorder caused by mutation in the GLA gene, leading to a deficiency in alpha-galactosidase enzyme and activity and accumulation of globotriaosyl ceramide in the vascular endothelium in the smooth muscle cells of different organs. The disease may start with severe pain, acroparesthesia, skin lesion, hypohidrosis, gastrointestinal symptoms, and leading to involvement of peripheral and central nervous system, kidney and heart, finally leading to organ failure. CARASIL is a rare autosomal recessive disorder caused by an homozygous condition, a B allelic mutation in HTRA1 gene, and it is a disease that usually presents with a lacunar stroke that with the onset between 20-44 years, early vascular dementia, head alopecia, and also attack of severe pain and lumbar disc herniation or severe spondylosis. And it is characterized by a severe disease progression. And lastly, COL4A1A2 syndrome are autosomal dominant angiopathies due to mutation in COL4A1 and 2 genes encoding for the chains A1A2 of type 4 collagen. And it is a heterogeneous disorder conditioning fetal and perinatal or childhood hemorrhages, porencephaly, seizure, and also development delay, but also a cerebral small vessel disease feature, including intracerebral hemorrhages, often triggered by physical activity or trauma or anticoagulant therapy. In these disorders are also described the cognitive symptoms and also muscle cramps, and also in some cases are observed the cerebral aneurysm and also retinal and nephrological disorders.
Thanks, Anna. And when you say treatment, no, you mean there is something that we can do to modify the disease course, the disease trajectory?
Yes, there is a disease that is treatable, and this mostly regards Fabry disease, where enzyme replacement therapy or chaperone therapy can prevent the disease progression, particularly heart and kidney damage, whereas it is not well known if these therapies can affect the cerebrovascular disease progression. However, it is known that this therapy has to be started as soon as possible in life. For the other cerebrovascular disease, the rare cerebrovascular disease, we have not a specific therapy, but it is well known that they require a specific management and controlling risk factor, and for instance, avoiding trauma or anticoagulants can influence disease progression. Therefore, the key message is recognition leads to intervention.
Oh, great. So let's dig into those clinical red flags. What feature should alert the clinician that a patient's small vessel disease might not be the usual age-related type?
The first one is the age of onset. When the white matter changes or stroke appear before 50, this is already a suspicious. Next, another important feature is the familial history, that is not only for stroke, but also for the other disease manifestation as migraine, cognitive decline, or for instance, psychiatric disorders across a generation. We have also to consider other neurological symptoms other than cerebrovascular disease manifestations, because sometimes stroke is not the most important manifestation, but also systemic occlusion, things that happen outside the brain, for instance, renal failure, heart disorders, or skin lesion as angiokeratoma in Fabry disease, alopecia or spine disease for Carasil, or hepatic, cardiac, or ophthalmologic involvement for COL4A1 angiopathy. And the last things we have to consider that sometimes in these disorders, there is a lack or poor presence of the common cerebrovascular risk factor.
That's it's very interesting. And so the brain isn't the only organ, the only structure giving us hints. The skin, kidney, eyes, and even bones can tell us something, right?
Yes, and you have think as of this disease as multi-system signals. In Fabry disease, for instance, you may see cornea verticillata, that is an ophthalmological disorder, and also this pain that distal pain as acroparesthesia or also cardiac involvement. And if we connect the dots early, we can often identify the disease and treat before the brain is affected severely.
Okay, so let's move to neuroimaging. MRI, all of us know that is one of the most powerful tools in identifying cerebrovascular disease and also the small vessel disease. But what kind of imaging finding, imaging feature, should raise suspicion of a monogenic or metabolic condition?
MRI patterns are very telling in these disorders, despite they are not so specific. In CADASIL, you typically can see white matter hyperintensities, mostly in the anterior temporal pulse and external capsule, and it is quite characteristic. And in CARASIL, you can see diffuse white matter lesion and also the forming spondylosis and at spine MRI. And also U fibers are spared, whereas it is not clear if external capsule and also temporal lobe are involved. In Fabry disease, there is often a pulvinar sign, that is an hyperintensity of pulvinar, but it is not clear if it is so specific, and a dolichectasic basilar artery. Lastly, in COL4, A1, A2 angiopathies, you can find microbleeds in unusual location, and also in brainstem and in cerebellum, previous ICH, and also porencephalic cystis.
Oh, great. So pattern recognition is essential. It's like reading a visual fingerprint on MRI, right?
Yes, but we have always to consider that the radiological sign have to be combined with the clinical and biochemical data, since, as we told before, they are sometimes not so specific and they can support the suspicion, but sometimes they are not so distinguishable from the sporadic cerebral small vessel disease.
Oh, okay. So, I'm going to the diagnostic workout. Suppose a clinician suspects a rare cerebral small vessel disease. What's the best diagnostic flowchart, the best diagnostic strategy?
I should recommend a stepwise approach. For instance, the first one is the clinical suspicion. So we need a deep anamnestic and neurological and also systemic examination. And we have to consider in this collection of data the red flag we discussed. So the clinical history should include risk factor collection and also familial history, not only for stroke, but also for other neurological and systemic features. Secondly, we have to do basic biochemical screening to exclude other risk factors, but also to make the dosage of lysosomal enzyme if needed. And the imaging pattern analysis is fundamental, the use of MRI that class to guide which genes to test. After, we have to do the genetic testing. We can perform a specific gene or otherwise perform a next generation sequencing panel that can include a panel of gene involved in cerebral small vessel disease. And if the variant is uncertain, we can use functional studies, familial segregation, or in some cases a CADASIL skin biopsy to confirm the relevance and the pathogenicity of the mutation.
So, thanks, that's a really great roadmap. And I imagine early testing that can prevent year of diagnostic delay, you know?
Yes, sure. In fact, many of these patients wandered through the healthcare system for years with a diagnosis of cryptogenic stroke or unspecified leukoencephalopathy, whereas a simple enzyme assay or a genetic panel could give them a name and avoid unuseful investigation and, when possible, make possible a treatment for this patient.
Okay, thanks, Anna. So let's move and focus on treatment. Which your expertise rare small vessel disease can we actually treat and well manage today?
The most important one is Fabry disease. For this disease, is available, the enzyme replacement therapy, that is algazidase alpha or beta, and also the oral chaperone therapy, that is migalastat. And these therapies have been demonstrated to reduce the accumulation of glibotriaosylceramide and therefore reduce the stroke risk. But it is whether we clearly know that the therapy is affect the heart and the kidney impairment, it is less clear if this therapy can really impact the cerebral small vessel disease progression.
So thanks, that it's really encouraging, and it's a reminder that early detection can truly change lives and quality of lives of our patients.
Yes, we recommend to patients to go to specialists. In fact, even in non-curable form like Cadasil, to know the genetic cause helps to avoid unnecessary procedures, help in guiding familial counseling, and focus on also on lifestyle modification. In fact, it has been demonstrated, for instance, for Cadasil, that hypertension and smoke influence the disease progression. And we have also to consider that there are specific indications also for the treatment of the other symptoms disease and for therapies that should be avoided. And there are, for instance, specific European efforts as a EAN guideline on monogenic disorders management, and also some fact sheets as do and don'ts documents from the European Reference Network for Rare Disorders that may guide clinicians but also patients in managing this disease.
So going to the summary and the take-home messages, and so before we wrap up, Anna, could you summarize the key take-home messages of this presentation?
Of course, we have to think rare and treatable or manageable when you see early or an atypical cerebrovascular disease, especially at young age without a risk factor, but it is not mandatory, and with a familial history. Always look for other neurological and systemic features. They are often the biggest clue. And go to MRI pattern recognition, helps narrow the diagnosis, and don't hesitate to perform biochemical and genetic testing. Early diagnosis means better outcomes and sometimes even reversals of symptoms.
I completely agree, perfectly said, Anna, and really thank you for sharing your expertise and obviously to all our listeners. And just an advice, all of us, we have to remember that small vessels can carry big diagnostic messages.
Thank you, Emanuele. It was really a pleasure to discuss this topic.
Thank you, Anne. Again, thank you all for joining our cast, Weekly Neurology. And please, all of you can visit our EN campus for more resources on rare cerebrovascular disease. And until the next time and the next podcast, stay curious, stay vigilant, and obviously keep learning.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. ENCAST Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.